This episode of the Backside Ground Balls podcast is presented by The Performance Academy. For all of your athletic training needs, train with purpose at The Performance Academy. TPA houses a number of training resources from private baseball and softball instruction to team sports performance classes. Utilize advanced technologies like Output Sports, HitTrax, and TrackMan to take your game to the next level. On top of our elite staff and advanced technological capabilities, be a part of the TPA family and take advantage of the many resources our facility has to offer. We are super excited to announce that we are now partnering with Routine Baseball. For all of your clothing needs, athleisure, the sickest baseball gear you can get. We're talking hoodies, shorts, sweatpants, sunglasses, hats, any baseball style you can imagine. Routine Baseball has it, and we are now partnered with them. All you got to do is go to routine.com/backsideground ball. That's a mouthful, so I'm going to say it again. It's routine.com/backsideground ball and check out all the different options they have. You will receive 10% off your order today. One more time, routine.com/backsideground ball and get 10% off your order today. Want to go to a game? How about a concert? How about going to see classical music? Whatever you're into, there's only one place to get your tickets. And thankfully, we are partnered with SeatGeek, the essential resource for live events. For any of your ticket needs, make sure you go over to SeatGeek.com and use the code BACKSIDEGROUNDBALL to receive $20 off your first purchase. Again, that is SeatGeek.com, promo code BACKSIDEGROUNDBALL to receive $20 off your first purchase.
And welcome back to the Backside Ground Balls podcast. Super excited to be back here on the pod. My name is Trevor Powers, and I am joined by my co-host, Dan Galati. Dan, it is a fine Sunday evening here. It was one of the first really, really warm days here in North Carolina. It seems like we're starting to get that really summer feel. Day-night doubleheader for the podcast. Exciting things coming out on all ends. How are we doing? Nice to see your face again after 3 hours hiatus.
Doing well. Excited for the pod. Excited for good weather.
Yes, always excited for good weather. Never a doubt about that. But in terms of the news, for anybody who follows this podcast and listens regularly, be on the lookout for some cool announcements coming from the Backside Ground Balls social channels. Really excited about some of the stuff we're doing. But Dan, you ready to talk some college baseball?
Yeah, let's do it.
I see you got that Delaware shirt on. Let's kick it off. Delaware swept the Towson Tigers on the road. Big series sweep as Delaware tries to stay in contention in the CAA and really push for the opportunity to go into the conference tournament and have a shot to win. Our other good friends, the Gardner-Webb Running Bulldogs, took 2 out of 3 from the Radford Reptiles. Really tough weekend for the Radford Reptiles, but we know the Running Bulldogs are playing good baseball right now, starting to round into shape as they finish up Big South play. In other news across the country, we had Notre Dame took a surprising upset series against number 8 Wake Forest. Number 9 Oregon State took the series over number 2022. I almost said 2022 like it was the year. Oregon, they also have a midweek matchup on Tuesday where Oregon can even the season series. Number 15 North Carolina took the series against Virginia Tech. University of Louisiana Lafayette bounces back after their tough weekend in Conway, South Carolina. Dan did not have a tough weekend in Conway, South Carolina this past weekend, but Lafayette bounces back with a strong series win against Southern Miss. Troy swept number 13, Coastal Carolina. Number 1, Texas A&M keeps it rolling with a series win over number 20, Georgia. Number 2, Arkansas took the series over Florida. Dan, there's a couple avenues of some cool conversations I want to have right now. I am first going to start with Peyton Holtz Deek in center field.
Okay.
Do you want me to give my opinion, or do I give? Can I give you the opportunity to get in here?
It's up to you. I mean, you're the host.
You go. You're the captain. Let me hear your initial thoughts of the Deek.
Cool play. Really cool play. Should never in a million years work. Ever. My first reaction is like, I don't understand. I guess like when you watch it on camera, I know when you see it through a lens, everything looks further away. But when you stand on a baseball field, if you have good eyes, I don't know how, if you're looking at the ball, if you're the runner at third base and you're looking at the play, how you can miss it. If you're telling me you're not looking at the play, and this is kind of where my head goes to, like why it should never happen, is the third base coach dead or alive? Because if you're like a little league coach who teaches it, like, you know, you set up in a runner stance and like they're going to go when he catches it to tag, and the third base coach will tell you when to go, did the third base coach not see it? Again, like when you're standing, I don't know how it ever works, because how could you not see the baseball? Like, do we just have bad eyesight from base runner and coach over there? Like, how do you not see the baseball is not – like, you watch the trajectory of it. It's up there. He's acting like he's catching it. How does it fool you? I guess it's just what's mind-blowing to me. Again, cool play. Like, I bet you they probably – like, that wasn't practiced as a team thing. That was those guys messing around at practice one day. Like, you know, taking fly balls in early work or something off the hack. And those dudes were just messing around in the outfield. And he was like, I'm going to try it. And he tried it. And I bet you they got back to the dugout like, I can't believe that worked. Because I just don't understand. And maybe you can chime in, you're a position player. I don't get how it worked.
It should never work. Okay. It should never, ever, 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 ever work. I don't even think it's that impressive of a play. Like, I'm going to be honest with you. Like, it's actually cool. Just more of an embarrassment and an indictment on what Florida baseball has been this year. Like, come shocker, who does it work against? The team that absolutely doesn't feel like they give a crap 90% of the time they play baseball games. So why wouldn't it work? Because why would you care when you're running on third in less than two outs? Like, your run doesn't matter. Like, it should never, ever work. And to my first two thoughts, one, 29 needs to get his eyes checked. Like you said, like, are we not, do we have bad tracking? Like, what, how does that happen?
You're watching the trajectory of the baseball, like at that point, you should be like, you know how you can see peripheral vision. Like, right. So like, I'm looking at you, I'm looking at what's above my camera right now, but I can also see you. Like, if you were to make some kind of motion, I would be able to see it.
Yeah.
Right. I can see you and I can see the baseball. Like, I don't know. I just don't understand
it. Just no matter what, it's like, to me, and again, I haven't run bases in a while, finished my career on a nice little 0-for streak. So probably tack an extra year on top of the last time I ran bases. So it's been a while. But if I remember correctly, you watch the player. One, it's not even a play at the plate. So, like, that's part of, like, just knowing the game of, like, hey, like, if anything, if they got the guy on second, completely understandable. And Peyton Holt mentioned after the game, it seemed like every guy moved, which if every guy moved, again, just bad baseball. But that was, from my perspective, that was intent to get the guy at second. Right, because he even threw it to third.
It's not like
he
threw it. Correct.
Yeah, like it
was way too deep. Right.
Yeah. So, and plus, there's nobody in second base's ear, so they might get fooled by a little shimmy a little bit more than the guy on third should. But what I remember is you stand if you're it's on the base runner. Now, every program teaches this a little bit differently. Most of the good programs do it a certain way, but besides the point. And
what's the right way?
I'll explain that in a second.
Okay.
You watch the player, and when the ball comes into view and makes contact with the glove, because we can see the ball coming down, we then jog home for a tie ball game, right? Like not crazy concept. So that was my first thought, was 29 needs his eyes checked, because apparently he's out there squinting trying to find the baseball and he has no idea where the baseball is in space. Secondly, is when you watch the overhead view, Third base coach looks like the biggest douchebag in the world. He's on the outfield grass, basically, deep. And the second the dude messes up, he goes, arms out, like he's shocked. The right way, if I remember properly, is you never want the base runner, especially at third. Because again, think if that's hit to left. Do you want your...
Right, correct.
Unless we got Al's neck out here, you can't look, watch the left fielder. So you want your base runner to be on the base ready to run. And the third base coaches, again, we have coaches. This would like be like in my mind, I was actually trying to wrap my head around this. As you can tell, I'm really fired up about how bad baseball plays was. This would be like an offensive coordinator being able to be in the ear of the quarterback and say defensive end blitz and not doing it, right? Like, in like seeing it, knowing the sign and not giving that call, where like you have coaches that can stand right on the third base bag with them and just being like, that's on you, bud. Like, dude, it's all on you. And then to throw your arms up like you did, like, again, just stand there and no, yes. Hold, go. Like, pretty simple, self-explanatory stuff there. So that's what I, that's the way I've always thought of it to be done.
I feel like I know a good amount of coaches. And I, one thing I know about a lot of coaches is that they love to, I won't say overcoach, they love to coach. Like, they love to coach everything.
Yeah.
Sometimes it can be overcoaching. Like, how do you let this one, you guys love to coach other stuff. Like, why aren't we in an opportunity where you actually can do something in game? Because a lot of times in baseball, we've said it, coaches can't really do much to affect the outcome. When there's something you can, that's pretty bad. And two, it's like, I think just kind of to the larger point here is like, Florida's checked out. Is it like that play just makes it look like I don't know. We got a long way to go still, but that just feels like you said, like, shocker, it comes against a Florida team who just at every turn has been a giant disappointment this year. Like, they feel checked out. That feels like a very checked out play. I don't know how you let it happen. Like, it's embarrassing. And you know, again, like I, he would never admit it, but I bet you they got back into the dugout and were like, can you believe that actually worked?
No doubt. Like, shouldn't have. Brody Dene, you got to get some base running lessons going on or something. Like, you got to figure it out.
And again, like we're saying, like, I don't know. Again, on camera, like, it looks so far away, third base and center field. When you stand on a baseball field, you know, you're not that far away to not be able to see the baseball going into the glove.
Again, just like, all you have to do is stare in at the center fielder. And when, again, you're not the guy that is important in that scenario. Like, just
no, because it's too deep for you to not get thrown out anyway. So you can wait a second. Like, you can delay it go.
Yeah. Like, that is like, it's such a simple play. Okay. Next thing that I'm fired up about, Kentucky and pointing in the air for home runs.
How in the world are we, like, where did that start? Who started that? It doesn't help anyway.
Who does it help? It doesn't help anybody.
It doesn't help. Like, it doesn't help anybody. Like, you're going to point to, like, no one saw the baseball but you come off the bat? And it happens way too – I mean, it happens in the big leagues more than it should. You just embarrass yourself. And, also, if you're in college baseball right now in the climate of college baseball – we need to know better. Every ball off the bat in college baseball right now, if I was on the mound or in the dugout again, every ball in the air, I'd be like, it's gone. Homer. Yeah. the way offenses are so good and guys at the plate are so good and we have the swing refined and how juiced baseballs are, like, guys would be popping out to short and I'd be like, whew, I thought that was going out. Like, seriously. I mean, so the fact that we're ever – like, I saw it. Actually matter for the first time in a big league game the other night, and the only reason it mattered and worked is because it wasn't actually hit in the air. It was a check swing that was like popped, I wouldn't even call it popped up, like kind of just blooped up, so not very high, to the catcher's left. So like it was kind of one of those things, because it was like an accidental, the ball hit the bat. And so the pitcher just pointed to the left and the catcher like threw his mask off and jumped up and ended up making the play. Other than that, there's no scenario. If a guy takes a full swing, everyone sees where the baseball goes. You don't need to point at anything. Don't point. You're embarrassed. It's embarrassing. I cringe every time I see it because it's such a bad look for pitchers.
If you're the Kentucky pitching coach this week at practice, what are you working on?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that would be funny to do that to guys. That feels like you're kind of embarrassing them, just firing hack attacks up there and making sure they don't point the ball at the ball.
They fake a throw and then you tie their arm to the side or something.
Yeah. But like, I think you definitely. I mean, I always had conversations. Like, I did make it a point to like, I was always mentioned like never point. We don't need to point. You don't need a point. You just don't. You never, ever, ever need a point. There's never a scenario like that. One very specific scenario I just laid out is the only time you should point. And that's one where there's like a full swing. Full swing is taken. Just watch it. Hope. And if you're in college right now, hope it's not going out of the yard.
It was two of them.
I know.
Way.
I saw them. Both. And one of them's a walk off, which makes it even worse. You're pointing at a walk. Like, I remember Edwin Diaz had a real bad one a couple years ago that I always think about when the ball like cleared the batter's eye in center. And it's just like, oof.
The walk-off was not touched either. But that's, we know South Carolina plays small and like, but still.
Don't point.
Just don't point. Don't point. Third, little viral video going around college baseball space, Georgia's pitcher putting stick on his glove. As a former college pitching coach, if there's anything you regret that you've told me, what is it?
Not making it mandatory that all my guys use some form of stick. I hope that doesn't make me sound like a scumbag, but I mean, I'll be honest. What's the statute of limitations on this? Can I get retroactively thrown out of games? Because in the second half of my career, there was not a single game that I appeared in that I didn't have sunscreen and rosin on my forearm. Not a single game. I just think it's so absolutely necessary to have because, again, we're talking about the climate of college baseball and the way offenses work. Like, you need an advantage. And you've been kind of fighting the front lines right now on social media of, like, it just evens the playing field. And I agree because, seriously, if I could go back, if I was hired as a pitching coach tomorrow, hopefully I never want to because if people hear this, they might not want to bring me in or the NCAA. Every one of my guys will get checked. But, like, you got to have some form of stick, even if it's just sunscreen and rosin, which I think is the easiest one to get away with because, especially as a reliever, you throw sunscreen on your arm, no one's checking for that. You just grab the rosin bag before the inning, slap your forearm, it's on there. You just keep touching your forearm. No one really notices anything. It's the easiest one to get away with. But, yeah, pine tar, rosin, spider tack, doctor the baseball college pitchers. What are we doing? Until they implement the MLB rule where you're getting checked every couple innings, doctor the baseball, please.
Until the NCAA has a crackdown, there's no point of not. And that's my – like, again, and pitchers really are – like, if you're not getting swing and miss in this environment right now, like, you are getting eaten alive because any ball that's hit is – going further than it should, and it's just further than it's ever been. We actually had a funny conversation a couple weeks back. I was saying how I was like pretty much the same point before this video came out, but I was like, I was a college pitching coach right now. I said, if I was a high school pitching coach, I'd have every kid down the bullpen freaking psh, it'd be freaking cloudy in 45 and you'd think, well, hey, hey NCAA, what are you, anti skin cancer? Well, come on now, 100%. Big pharma, what are you in bed? Like, what are we doing?
That's what I always thought. Like, the reason why I felt like I was never going to get caught in college was like, what are they going to say? You're not allowed to wear sunscreen. Like, sorry, I'm just trying not to get burnout here on this day. And I wasn't thinking when I slapped the rosin on my forearm. I just didn't want to have to keep going back to the rosin bag on the back of the mound. Like, I had sweaty hands. What do you want me to do? Yeah. I mean, at the very least, sunscreen and rosin.
That's what I said. I'd be running a Tommy Bahama shop out there in the bullpen. It'd be psh, and then guys would be poop, 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 poop. They'd be a cloud of dust coming out of the bullpen. I'd be like, come check them, dude. What do you want my guys get skin cancer?
It's like, It's well, and it's great because like it's so easy too to get away. Like I just think it's very easy to get away with sunscreen and rosin too, because it's like eventually you just get and it and you keep, you, if you go to your hat, then it gets on your hat. So then you can even go there if you don't need to go to the forearm. You're going to the hat every time, and it's just like, well, just adjusting my hat.
Yeah,
what are we doing? It's just rosin. You see it, like it's rosin. They don't need to know that their sunscreen mixes. Like you said, skin cancer is a real problem in this country.
Baseball players specifically are very cognizant.
You're out there all this, every day. I'm out in the sun. UV's 11 out here, man. That's strong.
That would be electric feel if the pitcher broke out. Like umpire's like, what's on your arm? It's like sunscreen, man. The UV rays are out here. They're kicking. Like, pull UV up your app
today. Yeah. Check the UVs today.
Oh, that
my grandmother died awesome. Of skin cancer. You're gonna tell me I can't wear this, sir?
Yeah, you start runs in the family,
making up dead relatives. Yeah,
yeah. So, a couple of fun topics across college baseball. That's the best part about college baseball, that you get to have those conversations. But yeah, I'd be running a doctor and factory out there in the bullpen, no matter where I was. It'd be mandatory. Be like, dude, it's like I don't like pitching with stick. Well, learn it, get it out. Like, let's figure it out. We need swing and miss. Let's go into some of the results this weekend. Let's start with.
Before we get into it, because I know the series we're going to get into, we're going to take a deeper look into them, and they deserve it. Can we have a quick conversation about a team that we had high expectations for?
Yeah, of course, always.
I'm out on Wake Forest. I think it's time.
Tell me why.
I just like that's such a you're finally starting to get momentum back. They had been playing really good baseball, and I know they lost some tight games. A walk off today. They stranded 10 guys on base. You get to the end of April. I mean, it's Wednesday's May 1st. We're getting into crunch time here. We were just talking about it. Who were we talking about yesterday? Virginia Tech, about how, you know, the gauntlet of the ACC and a lot of these conferences. And I think one of the comments you made is like, well, you don't got Notre Dame next weekend, so you kind of got to, you know, it's just you're always getting someone tough next weekend. Wake Forest goes out there and loses that series to Notre Dame. That can't happen this time of year. And I know there's a lot of people that – I shouldn't say that can't happen because it can, and we just watched it happen. But, like, that's a really, really tough series loss. And they can still bounce back. They're going to be in the tournament. They can still win the ACC tournament. They can still win a regional, a super, and get to Omaha. But why should I – like – talk me back into them, I guess. Why? Explain to me why I should still be bought in on this Wake team, that they can turn it around and get hot and go on a run. Because, you know, we mentioned how that, you know, all year we've been like, well, they could be this year's Tennessee. We can be this year's Tennessee. I've said it. I'm blue in the face at this point talking about how Tony Vitello by this point always has his teams playing best. Wake Forest just went and looked like the Wake Forest from the beginning of the year again.
On April 28th, I cannot, and this day with it being fresh, I can't give you a single reason why we should. I can't. Maybe we'll see it over the next couple weeks, but that's back-to-back midweeks dropped. That's coming off of a loss. Obviously, they came into this weekend with a loss at Elon, which is fine. Respectable program. Win on Friday. Blowout Saturday. Tough one. Also coming off a series, and had it not been for Florida State's bullpen and depth struggles, and probably if you see their full starting rotation, you're probably talking about only one-ish win, maybe two wins over the last eight games or so, coming off of a series that you probably should have swept. When you leave Notre Dame and Boston College on the schedule right now in the turnover opportunities that those schools are in currently, you left some meat on the bone. And definitely going to hurt their hosting chances. They have to probably go into NC State and Clemson and probably win at least four to even be considered. And again, there's nothing that gives us optimism that they would, in fact, do that right now. Nothing tells me that would.
No.
And that's my point. Like, I don't know why I should still believe in them. Like, I'm tired of talking about the stuff that their pitching staff has and how that can carry them. I'm tired of kind of believing that the offense has enough pieces to win these games when time and time again we see them, you know, underperform. It's crazy. Could you imagine if Chase Burns didn't end up there?
Yeah, Hartle had inning in a third, 7 runs, 4 and 3 walks, no Ks on Saturday. Like, and again, South Bend in late April when home base looks like the way it does right now. Like, I get it. It's a sleepy opportunity. Like, but that's inexcusable. You can't drop the Sunday that one.
And if it's a sleepy opportunity, if you told me, let's say Duke was out there. Duke had been rolling. Duke had won 4 conference series in a row. Duke was high, flying high. Duke was, you know, number 6 in the country. Duke goes out there and I don't know, maybe loses a series, and you go, okay, wow. That, again, I would still be like pretty critical and be like, was Duke not as good as we thought? But I would also be like, okay, they got, you know, that was kind of a trap series because they thought they were going to go out there and roll. Wake Forest is fighting to make up the ground that they had coughed up early in conference play when they lost a series against Duke, when they lost a series, get swept by North Carolina at home, when they go to UVA and have bad start by Hartle and a bullpen blow up that causes a walk-off home run against Virginia. Like, that's just, you're trying to put it together. You realize you've been underperforming. They know they've been underperforming. And look, I hate to be so critical of any of these teams because it's so hard to win and win at the highest level and be consistent, because you're right. Because it's not like Notre Dame. You know, I'm talking like Notre Dame's a doormat. Notre Dame's got a bunch of really talented baseball players that you know, are not going to lay down for anyone. They don't care who comes in there. They're going to play. They have pride. They're competitors. So I really do hate talking down on these kids. But I'm disappointed, I think, as someone who I think so highly of that program, and I really like that program, and that team last year was so much fun. Like, I was rooting for them harder than anybody else in the country last year, and I was very excited for this year to see what the kind of the next step was going to be. You know, can Wake Forest sustain one of the smallest schools in the conference? Can they sustain this kind of, you know, dominance at the top of the country? And it's just been a total letdown. And this series right here just kind of was like the stamp on that.
Yeah, I mean, Notre Dame's 22-20 on the year. Swept ACC play so far against teams that are, I don't want to use the term respectable, but ranked top 30 programs. Swept by Virginia Tech. Swept by Florida State. Swept by NC State. Swept by Clemson. Swept by Carolina. It's like everybody takes Notre Dame and handles their business whenever.
They handle their business. Like, that's what you want to see. Like, show up focused and understand the job at hand, the task at hand. Because that's one of the things that always used to frustrate me and clearly still does, is like, there has to be that mindset of not like nameless, faceless opponent, right? Nameless, faceless opponent at all time, no matter who you're playing, what the situation is, whether it's you know, last year's LSU team you got to go play, or it's Notre Dame at the end of April, nameless, faceless opponent, handle your business, go out there and understand the job at hand, understand the task, and, you know, do everything you can to come away with a series win. That's what, I mean, look, I don't know if there's really a comparable series this weekend that I can point to and say, look at what, how they handled it. Maybe North Carolina a little bit, where Carolina kind of had stumbled a little bit, and Virginia Tech comes in, a Virginia Tech team comes into Chapel Hill that can really swing it. And what does Carolina do? Carolina, that's a team that you know, I think you're pretty high on, and a team that I like. I like that the way that offense is. I kind of like what the pitching staff seems to be rounding into form. You said that to me. You were up there yesterday. Carolina goes out there and wins the series. They just understand the task at hand. You go out there and you do the job. I don't know, man. It's just disappointing.
if to shine a positive light on something you just said, if it was the MLB playoffs, I think Carolina would be my pick to win the World Series. I just don't know how well their roster structure works in a regional because it's very bullpen reliant and you're going to need length out of your starting pitching, but their starting pitcher's taking shape and it looks to be formidable. They're probably going to host. It'll be interesting to see, but I like that. I think that team probably plays the best defense out of any team I've seen in the country. They probably run the bases better than any team I've seen in the country. They definitely move runners better than any team I've seen in the country. And they also hit very well.
I was going to say, the lineup's scary.
It's scary. And they can also all, you know, they have no problem. Vance Honeycutt laid down a sacrifice bunt first and second, nobody out late in a game because that's what needed to be done. And he did it. And I'm convinced this is another fun one that I thought of this weekend. I don't think I've ever seen a ball land hit in the air to center field against Carolina. No, I'm not even kidding you. I cannot register one ball that was hit in the air that landed in center field. I would love
when you say ball in the air, can you
I don't think anything.
Specify just a launch angle.
Let's say
I just don't think you would have registered a line drive to center field.
Maybe. It's like a but true I'm convinced. Single. I would love to know what, like, if there was a way to quantify, I mean, I know there is, but, like, college baseball-wise, it's, like, how many balls actually land in center field when he's out there? Because he is special. He made a play first and second, ninth inning, and for those that don't know, Vance Honeycutt, center fielder for Carolina, first and second, nobody out. What?
Oh, I was hoping you'd keep going because we could have clipped it. You said Carolina instead of UNC Chapel Hill.
That's why I thought you were reacting. First and second, nobody out. Virginia Tech hitter hits an absolute missile to right center. And I would say every center fielder in the country, it's a diving play for. And I kid you not, he coasted to it. Made the play look easy. And it was like nobody even in the crowd. Like everybody's so used to it. He's been there for 3 years. Nobody bats an eye.
Are you talking about the ball in right center? That was today.
Yeah. No. Yeah. No, that was this was yesterday in the ninth inning.
Because right, is that the one he kind of took like a funky route to as well?
No, this was a completely different play that was never posted on social media. Just from me being there was like it was no factor because it was just like, oh, Vance covers every. I think North Carolina baseball fans are going to be in for a rude awakening next year when one ball splits a gap and they're going to be like, we haven't seen that in 3 years. Like, what is this? Like, you mean we don't have Jackie Bradley Jr. back reincarnated? Like, what is this?
Yeah, and that's a good comp there because I was just going to say, like, the questions and some of the concerns about his swing and, like, how much swing and miss there is. And we had the conversation last week maybe when we were there talking about could he get eaten alive potentially in pro ball, especially early on? Like, will there be a lot of struggles? But, like, he might, like, especially if you look at center field in Major League Baseball right now, like, I feel like he could still get, he's going to get more opportunities just because of the defense. And, like, he'll be on a big league roster just because of this defense and then anything added offensively. Because you see teams going to kind of that at the Major League level right now. Like, you know, outside of Mike Trout, like there aren't a ton of scary offensive guys playing that position. He could really, like, I think there's a potential that even if he struggles with the bat, that he still moves along through whatever organization gets him, and he still ends up as a starting big league center fielder just because of how good he is defensively.
He, no doubt. I mean, his floor is fourth outfielder who could pinch run and probably steal you 30 bases if you wanted to get him out there enough and play elite defense when it matters most, like no questions asked. Also probably can hit home runs because he has a ton of power. He might be the most athletic kid in the country. I don't think that's like a stretch to say. Like he very well probably could have been, he could have probably made Drake May some money, let's be honest, because he probably could have been wide receiver one in Carolina Blue football because he's that special of an athlete. I think I'd be fascinated to see, like, because there's a part of me that believes he's like, and I mean, I think I'm anti-change guys and change what works, but like if they can iron out the swing and miss, which again, how you do that, that's pretty hard to do. I mean, you're talking about an MVP winner. Like I wouldn't, like, assuming health, it's Byron Buxton. It's Byron Buxton when he's right and going well. And it's, yeah, I mean, and I don't think that's a stretch. Like, I see the reaction. I don't think that's a stretch at all. Tools wise.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say the bat, like when Byron Buxton is healthy, the bat is.
MVP and that's level. What I'm saying. Like with development, Vance could produce Byron Buxton level numbers when healthy. Yeah.
I dig it. I can dig it.
Yeah. Are we, speaking of Carolinas, are we in on South Carolina?
No.
No, you're not in on South Carolina. You think this weekend was more Kentucky playing bad ball, which gut-wrenching Friday night loss, up 4-1 in the ninth. Gavin Cassis finally decides to wake up from his full slumber from really what started midway of the season last year after he went bonkers. Ties the game up. They end up losing that game. What I'll say about South Carolina, the reason I ask, series to close out the year. Missouri on the road. Georgia at home. We've seen, I mean, South Carolina has been about as good as anybody at home, so you give them the advantage. And Tennessee on the road. So two very, very winnable series, and probably talking about a Tennessee that team that's probably clinched everything they could ever imagine. So what does that series actually look like in terms of meaning for the Volunteers? South Carolina has an opportunity to go into the postseason with a lot of momentum coming off this series win.
Yeah, I just still the offense is underwhelming me. The pitch, I mean, they were great this weekend. Don't get me wrong. They're great at home. They're probably going to host a regional. I just don't think they're a serious threat in the postseason once we get to that point. Like, they're going to be there. They're probably, like I said, like after this weekend, and if they finish strong, like you said, they'll probably host, especially if, you know, one of these teams doesn't get a host opportunity. Duke, you know, like they could find themselves hosting a regional, which at Founders they are very good, but I just, you know, I don't know. I'm more disappointed in Kentucky and the fact that you and I kind of, I don't know. I'm worried that the clock is striking midnight, especially, you know, we talked about it, like, on the flip side, what Kentucky's finishing is here in the SEC, what they have left. The fact that they played so well against Tennessee, lost that series, we both kind of gave them the pep talk, the motivational speech of, like, go out there and again, understand the task at hand, go out there, and you kind of got to find a way. I don't know if the game on Saturday kind of took the juices out of them, because they really did, you know, it was just such a barn burner of a game. They win at 15-13, if that meant they had nothing left in the tank. I would have liked to see them have won on Friday. I don't know. I'm more disappointed in Kentucky coming out of that weekend than I am in South Carolina. And again, I'm being very negative tonight. Maybe it's because it's late Sunday. I'm tired, but that was kind of frustrating to me.
Yeah, I think the 10-0 loss on getaway day when you're competitive, like when you're a team that's like, I mean, we talked about this in passing, probably you and I just having conversations, like, Energy Sunday, right? Like, teams are built on Sundays because either you have an opportunity to sweep a conference opponent or salvage a series or win a series, right? Like, Sundays are always going to be valuable to being able to do that. And I get getaway day. I get it's tough. I get all that stuff. But 10-0 loss, it just can't happen for a team that wants to win.
The getaway day thing to me was always kind of a joke in college baseball for a couple reasons. Like, one, early in the season, like, yeah, sure. Like, getaway day in a non-conference series, it's early, great. But we're talking about getaway day for Kentucky on April 28th at South Carolina is not a Thursday 1 o'clock start for an MLB team that's got to go across the country after the game on a flight. Like, it's completely different. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that there is no such thing as getaway day for you. Like you're saying, like, it's Energy Sunday is what it is. Like, it's like it's a chance to either avoid a sweep, win a series, or sweep. Like, that, all three are important no matter what. Like, every game in front of you is important, as every coach in the country says. Kentucky, like, you are trying to do something that you have never really done, and some people still really don't think you can do. There can be, you can't sleepwalk, like, you can't sleepwalk through a game. What do you, who do you think you are, Florida? You can't sleepwalk through a Sunday afternoon game in Columbia trying to win a series. That's like, I don't know. I wanted to see more because I really do believe in what they've built this year. And I liked the makeup of that team, and they were kind of rolling. And now it's like, ever since, you know, the backside ground balls got on board, the ship's going down just like it does with everybody else we get on board with. It's unbelievable. We're just, I was hoping that Kentucky would save some face for us, and I'm taking it as a personal slight that they're not.
Do you think they fly to Columbia from Lexington, or you think they bus it?
I have no idea, dude. I can't fathom the budget these schools have. I don't know. You mean to tell
six
me
hours
not,
and
they're
40
not,
minutes.
They're not getting on the bus, grabbing some Wawa or Golden Corral and heading back to Lexington? I don't, that's all I know. There's more to that life than that.
It's about a 7-hour bus, so yeah.
I have no idea. Curious. Probably fly would be my question. The SEC has ridiculous amounts of money.
Yeah, so, but
I guess fly.
It will be interesting to see how Kentucky bounces back, but that was definitely not – it only gets harder.
And there lies my problem. What did we say last week? It'll be interesting to see if Kentucky can bounce back.
True.
Like,
I'm just getting criticized over here on using cliche podcast.
No,
talk.
You're not. I'm sorry. I was just trying to hammer home my point. It was already hammered home. You're fine. You're absolutely right. It will be interesting. I hope they can bounce back because, again, like I really liked what this team, how this team was built, and what this team was built on. But like you said, I mean, you got. I'll tell you what, man, if they lose that series in Gainesville, I'm going to have Kentucky get ousted in the regional when we do the prediction show.
Will we be surprised if they get ousted in Gainesville? Not at all. So let's just play this whole game today. Are we in on Mississippi State?
Yeah, why not? Let's go. Can you explain something to me first before we get into this?
Mm-hmm.
How many host sites do we have for regionals? Because I'm seeing on social media how like Mississippi State really did a big, big thing for their chances to host a regional. And I'm sitting here over here going, Mississippi State's going to host a regional? 16 sites? Mississippi State's getting one in Starkville? Like, I know that would be cool and all, but is that a legitimate possibility here?
Everything, any SEC and ACC program that decides to win baseball games has an opportunity to host. Yes.
Is it just because we're trying to fill, like we just want the biggest stadiums we can? Like what's the?
No, I think it's more like, again, you look at the RPI impact of 2 out of 3 against Vanderbilt. Like it
that
just changes
top 16
everything. Yeah. Like it could take you from a top 25 and the wins that they have potentially on the schedule the rest of the way, just guess we, that's how it happens. It's very, I mean, the committee's very, it's RPI or bust. Like that's all they use. So like, you know, that if they can manipulate some wins along the way and, you know, maybe take one from Arkansas, they're probably going to be in a good spot.
I guess that makes sense. I guess it's I should know it's RPI heavy, and that's kind of how they decide most of these things, you know, in all of these college sports except for football where they have the worst system. But basketball, it feels like it's RPI heavy and whatever those quad wins mean. I'll buy in on Mississippi State. I mean, I want Mississippi State to be good again because I think college baseball is more fun when that place is rocking and they're rolling. That's the second time, you know, they hadn't really had – impressive series wins. It's their best, you know, kind of series of the season. And hey, if this is when you're going to turn it on, This is, there's probably no better time than now to turn it on. It's just, what are they going to do the rest of the way? Like you said, you know, you still have to play Arkansas. How do you handle that series? Alabama's kind of hit or miss. Like, that's the thing. I guess Alabama's honestly probably the more important series in my mind than it is Arkansas, because you're going to Arkansas. So that's going to be, you know, that ain't easy for anybody, especially facing that pitching staff. But Alabama, who's a team that's very good. Alabama's a team who can kind of beat anybody. They've shown it. If you go and lose a series at home to Alabama, does this series win over Vanderbilt matter for anything?
No, it doesn't. And right. For RPI purposes, I pulled up a live RPI calculator, which is pretty cool here. This weekend alone, and it looks like it goes by like momentum base. So like Mississippi State won two straight, so it bumped them up 17 spots, it looks like, or maybe that's like 17 in like the total RPI number. Florida, let's just to put into perspective how big of an impact just playing in the SEC is. Florida lost the series to Arkansas, but had 13 points positive for their RPI purposes.
Just for that one.
So, like, just for that one win. So, Mississippi State still has that. Right now, they're currently 28th, which, again, like we said, could change very quickly. But they are not in a position to host at this point in time, but they very well could. Kentucky did not seem to move much. I don't know if they haven't updated this weekend yet, though. So, interesting stuff once I looked it up.
Yeah, I mean, are you bought in on – I guess I'll flip it back to you. Are you bought in on this Mississippi State team?
It's interesting because I think their pitching has come around. Sure. I think Gerangelo Cinte, that's about definitely better than the last time I pronounced it. I mean, everybody talks about – how cool it is that he throws from both sides of the plate, from both arms, both sides of the plate. It is late. But he's actually like really good. Like too, like it's like 98 from the right side and like 95 from the left side and just obvious funky at bats for guys. And he's really reined it in. He struggled a lot with walks last year, but this year it's been a lot more just efficient. And he's definitely a guy that has transformed his career. You know, he's always been kind of not necessarily like a bit or like a kind of thing that went out there, a pitcher that went out there and wasn't really used in high leverage stuff. Just, he was just kind of creative. Now he's like a guy. And then Kai Stevens, who's pitched on Fridays for Mississippi State, like that's about as formidable as a 1-2. And if I mean, remember when we did our Mississippi State breakdown debrief and kick you to the curve last year in March because they played so bad. Remember what it was? It was pitching. Like their offense was fine. Their offense has always been fine. That park plays small. They're able to do different things because they recruit at a high level. It was, and you could see the evident swing and miss. It was walks. They've really improved that this year. So we know the talent is there. They recruit about as high of a level as anybody across the country. Dakota Jordan is one of the best athletes in the country, and he's one of the best players in the country. So having him in the middle of your order, you know, you have your superstar. And if they're starting rotation, all I'm going to say is if they don't host, there's nobody that wants to see them as a 2 in their regional. Nobody.
No, because I think you like you just kind of laid it out there. Like I think the rest of the country likes it when Mississippi State's kind of sleeping the sleeping dog, right? You let the sleeping dog lie. And if they get in and they are, like you said, a 2 in a regional, that's a really tough draw for somebody, you know? And it's impressive. What makes this weekend even more impressive, Dakota Jordan didn't really do anything out of the 3-hole in the lineup. You know, now Hunter Hines is obviously very good. He probably, you know, just as good as Dakota Jordan or having just as good of a year. And he had a really good day on Saturday. I think he had 5 RBIs. Was that Saturday at 5 RBIs? But whatever the case. Yeah, I mean, I think you can see, really, you get any of these teams that have this much talent. Like, as stupid as this sounds, I just pronounced them dead. Wake Forest, you get Wake Forest. You don't want Wake Forest to be the 2 in your regional either if you're the host. Like, you don't want
this is really wild. You don't want to see Florida if you're as you're whatever they're going to be if they get in three. If you're the one seed, because it's just like that when you have that much talent in the sport of baseball, if the guys on the mound that are that talented and you have talented guys that can pitch it, if they get hot and they dial it in for whatever reason, you can go a really far away riding the backs of them when no one sees it coming, right?
Yeah.
When you look at those teams that always surprise in the postseason, you know, Oral Roberts last year, it's like Oral Roberts figured it out on the mound. You know, they were really good all year, but like it's like, oh, we didn't realize how good. Well, they had starting pitching and they had a reliever who was throwing the crap out of the baseball and the offense got timely hits. And that's kind of the recipe come postseason time.
Yeah. On the opposite end of that, are we worried about Vanderbilt?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they've had such a weird year because every time you think of Vanderbilt, you think premier program. You think, you know, pitching, and Bryce Cunningham was outstanding Friday. I mean, 122 pitch complete game shutty. That's great, but I'm silent for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, after that, it was like, well, Carter Holton, that wasn't very good. And they've dropped some series now that have kind of been like they looked at that one and it was just like, Vanderbilt lost a series at home. You know, going on the road and losing a series is one thing, but, you know, they've got swept at South Carolina now. They lose a series to Mississippi State. It's kind of interesting. And you know, because Vanderbilt's never really going to bash. Like, it doesn't feel like that. And maybe they're trying to build it that way. They're starting to, but Vanderbilt's going to try and do the things that you talk about Carolina doing really well, which is run the bases, kind of play that team game of offense and put pressure on the defense and ride the backs of like the highest caliber arms in the country. Cause that's usually, you know, they recruit up there. And when you think of like the best guys kind of that come out of there, like a lot of times I always think of, you know, the arms that have come from there. Underwhelming this weekend. Underwhelming this year. And like, that was the concern, right? We talked early in the year when we were kind of just like trying not to ride the roller coaster of early season stuff. It was like, well, the bullpen, but it's Vanderbilt. They'll figure it out. They haven't really, you know, because we say all the time, like, well, they have one of these talented young guys will step up because that's what always happens. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's hasn't happened. Like, there's not, they don't scare me, I guess, is kind of the point. Their arms don't really scare me.
And really, they never. Their arms have, but offensively they've never put like fear in their opposition. But I think that right now, you know, obviously they're not getting it on the consistency on both sides. It's the high highs and you see them have a good weekend and go win at LSU and you're like, whoa, like that's loud. Like that's impressive. And maybe it's not because obviously of what we see LSU has become this year. But you're like, oh, that piques your interest. And then this weekend, right? And again, Mississippi State's a good club. You have to go to their park, right? And it's never easy to go to their park and play. And that's always going to be a factor when you're talking about anything on the road, right? We've talked about how home road splits are just massive. Actually, it was home for Vanderbilt. So Vanderbilt, no excuse, right? Now. Yeah. Right. So, sorry. I was literally like, and then I pulled up the schedule. So that's even worse. That just can't happen.
And one reliever this weekend had a scoreless outing. That's very un-Vanderbilt.
It's very, there's a common theme. How many times do we feel like we get on these recaps and talk about that? How it comes down to like relievers blowing it up.
And that's why it's so important. And that's why pitching, man, like it's so important to be able to have guys, especially guys that you can count on and rely on and be stoppers. And again, why, like, we talk about Arkansas's offense having struggles, but I'm just like, I'm still so unbothered by it because it's like, well, Arkansas's pitching is just next level.
is a you know, especially starting with like deep into games, and you can mix and match in the bullpen, or you're not asking them to carry a lot of innings. Like, it all works hand in hand. And I think Florida State's so good because maybe they don't have the starting pitching to outside, you know, Arnold's great, but like they don't really have a third right now because of injuries. And like, but it's like their bullpen can go out there and staff a whole game, and they have depth, and they can use guys on back-to-back days, and you feel confident in it. It's just like, you know, what are the question marks about Tennessee that we talked about last time when we were talking about how good they are? Like, it's like, well, we'd like to see some of their starting pitchers, because it's like pitching is kind of king. Like, you need it.
Yeah.
You ain't going anywhere without it.
Mm-mm. No, definitely not. You mentioned the Seminoles of Florida State. They came up north for the second straight weekend, and they took the series against Duke. Duke is reeling a little bit, depending on how you view it. Loss, blowout loss at Campbell, 18-4 in seven innings. 4-2 loss on Friday. Jamie Arnold's one of the best pitchers in the country. That's an honorable loss. 7-6 loss on Saturday. So then you lose the series, but good bounce back, right? That's all you can ask for. Again, the thing that you hope for is send the Seminoles home at least licking their wounds on a Sunday, and you get a 16-4 win. You get to go into finals week. Hopefully your high academic students have been studying and are well prepared for their final exams. But the reality is that's a tough loss for Duke. But again, it shows that Florida State, right? We talked about how they probably should have won the series against Wake Forest, but they didn't. This shows how good Florida State can be, because this Duke team is very good. They're coming off a series, their four straight ACC series wins. So definitely playing really good baseball right now, but Florida State handled their business.
Yeah, and I still think Duke's a really good team. I just think that, like, I think very highly of Florida State. I've kind of been on the Florida State train since they started off really hot. I love Jamie Arnold. I mean, he's, you know, he kind of out-dueled Santucci earlier in that game there, but Duke did a really good job of getting the pitch count up. 103 pitches to get, you know, 15 outs. You kind of, if you're Duke, you get him out after five, you're in that game, you think, wow, we're in a really good position. To me, the performances for Florida State from Brendan Oxford, who goes 3 1/3 scoreless, doesn't walk anybody out of the bullpen, like we just talked about, getting bullpen guys to have outings like that is massive, and that's how you win series like that. And then Carson Dorsey giving you six strong on Saturday, and then piecing it together with that deep bullpen. Like, so what Brendan Oxford allowed them to do by going 3 1/3 and being that good after Arnold doesn't get you deep into that game, or as deep as he normally does, is then allows you to have, you know, four of your best guys available on Saturday to then, you know, take game two. So for those two guys, it's a huge performance. It's I think this is this is the weekend Florida State needed to have. To me, this proves that they're, I think, one of the top eight seeds. I really believe in them, and I really like where they are, and I like where they're at in the ACC. And I think if they could get another crack at Clemson, the way they're playing now, especially if it's like neutral site or in Tallahassee, like I really like Florida State.
Yeah, I think they're in a good position, as you mentioned, to be that national seed. And again, I think the best part, that if you're a Florida State fan or anybody who follows the program, it's not like it was the Tibbs and Smith show, right? And that's what it's kind of a lot of times with both of them spending a lot of the season hovering around 400. You wonder, what is this team outside of them? And Jamie Furrer is really good. Marco, you think it's Dingus or...
Yeah,
whatever.
That's how I read
Marco
it.
Dingus, Daniel Cantu, like they have guys, but like it's really Smith and Tibbs led. And through those first two games that you won, Smith and Tibbs were fine. I mean, Tibbs had a really good game on Sunday in the 16-4 loss, but that's positive to me. Like, that's very positive to me that you can turn around and win games when your superstars aren't superstarring. And we know the talent that Leiter has coming back. And if you can combine Jamie Arnold with Cam Leiter and Connor Whitaker, I see it. Right. I see it. And we've seen that they can win midweek games. So, you know, they at least have starting pitching depth. They're in a position to do some impressive things. And I love what Link Jarrett's been able to do. I love what he's done for his career. I mean, he took Notre Dame to the College World Series and upset Arkansas that year when they were absolutely unbelievable. And you know, he's going to be, I mean, I think the ceiling of Florida State for any sport, right? Not just baseball. The ceiling for Florida State is special, and Link Jarrett has the opportunity to bring them back to the glory days that was when Mike Martin was there running it.
There's no question. There's no doubt about it. And again, like, just this is the type of stuff you need to be doing at this time of year. And this is, you know, you go out there, you handle your business, and you know, you kind of continue to improve your stock moving into the postseason, continue to kind of keep the momentum. And you said they should have won that series against Wake. Like, this is one of the best teams in the country in my eyes. And mm-hmm. Jamie Arnold is going to – you can throw Jamie Arnold up there against anybody. Like, when you get into postseason play, if he's matched up, you know, late, Chase Burns, Hagen Smith, like, there isn't an arm out there that you don't feel confident that Jamie Arnold can, you know, he went out there, he dueled with Chase Burns, he looked great. Santucci, like, there's not these high-level arms we're talking about. Jamie Arnold has gone out there and just matched every single week. So how crucial is that when you get into postseason play? It's the point I was just making. So, yeah, Link Jarrett, Florida State, the talent that they have to choose from in that state, in the state of Florida, in recruiting, you know, the name brand, they're on their way up for sure.
Mm-hmm. I think so. And if you're a Florida State hater, get used to watching this team be for good, sure, because this is only the beginning of what is going to be a factory. Dan, it's getting late. We've spent a couple hours on this, whole podcast thing and recording. I think it's starting to wear on us after having a ton of juice to start. Any closing thoughts before we get out of here?
Yeah, I just jinxed Florida State. Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry to Florida State. Sorry to Mississippi State. Kudos. I know all you Commodore fans are going to be fired up because the opposite of the backside ground balls. Sorry to the Radford Reptiles coming into the weekend. I think that I might have jinxed you.
Outside of the three of us, anyone will catch on to that bit?
No.
Okay. We might as well keep it rolling then.
Mm-hmm. Thank you to our listeners for tuning in, as that will conclude our episode for today. Make sure you're subscribing to the podcast on all podcast platforms, including Apple Pods, Spotify, and anywhere you find your podcast. We post episodes bi-weekly, always hitting your feed in the morning. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at BacksideGB, Instagram at BacksideGroundBalls, and TikTok at BacksideGroundBall. Most importantly, make sure you're sharing with five friends, and we'll see you next time on the Backside Ground Balls podcast.